Hi, everyone. I'm Mohit, and I'm going to talk about our work on transitioning research simulations into hardware system. This is a joint work with Ying Zhang, my advisor, Professor Michael Swift, and Professors Andrea and Ramsey Apache Dussau from Ministry of Wisconsin-Madison. So we consider flash storage stack research today. It can be broadly classified into three categories. The first category is where we are building new SSDs with which have new and better algorithms, especially related to flash management, to provide better performance and reliability for these devices. The second set of research projects are focused on designing new operating system and application abstractions which can optimize for the performance and reliability characteristics of these devices. And in between these two, we have the device interface, which is as skinny as read, write, and trim commands. However, in reality, it is composed of several thousands of lines of code split across the device drivers within the operating system storage stack and within the firmware. In order to evaluate new SSD designs and the new interfaces, we have mainly focused on three different techniques. If you have the luxury of being Intel or Samsung, you can replace the firmware or the flash translation layer within these devices and build new SSD designs. Otherwise, in academia or for researchers, you can build FPGA prototypes, which are quite flexible in the sense that you can hardwire different components, and they tend to be fast, but you have to build everything from scratch, and it's hard and time-consuming. On the other hand, we have simulators and emulators, which can use block traces to replay, and you can implement device models which tend to be somewhat accurate and quite handy for researchers to experiment and evaluate new SSD designs. In the past, over the last 3 years, we have seen a lot of research on flash using unmodified SSDs, using simulators, and none using hardware. If we consider papers in last 3 years, we can clearly see that most of them have used simulators for evaluating new SSD designs. However, there are three major limitations of doing that. First, simulators or emulators cannot model real hardware performance accurately. And in the context of SSDs, this is even problematic because they are quite complex, have a lot of concurrency and internal parallelism. Secondly, you cannot model complete interaction with the operating system storage stack if you are using a simulator to design new SSD. And this is because SSDs are quite sensitive to how you align requests and the application behavior in particular. Finally, you have the problem of replaying traces that they cannot model request dependencies. For example, if you have consistency or ordering guarantees which need to be provided across different requests, that cannot be done during the replay of a trace. And also, most traces tend to have read and write commands, and they do not tend to have the new commands which you want to expose with these devices. In this work, we take a fourth approach, where we use SSD prototyping kit, also known as the Jasmine board or the OpenSSD hardware platform, which looks something like this or like that. So in this talk, I will be talking about how we took two projects which were earlier designed and implemented and evaluated in research simulation, and we prototyped them on this board. We prototyped the flash-tier solid-state cache device, which was published in the USS last year, and nameless writes SSD, which was published last year in FAST. And over the course of prototyping, we faced several challenges, and I will be talking about what challenges we faced, what were our experiences, and what lessons we learned, which can be applied to general SSD designs and new interfaces. So in the remainder of the talk, I will first give a background on the OpenSSD hardware platform, then talk about the solid-state cache and the nameless write SSD interfaces, and then I will talk about our prototyping experiences with the evaluation of our prototypes, and then finally I will conclude. I can safely assume that almost everyone here knows a lot about Flash SSDs, or at least the internal properties of Flash Medium, but still I will reiterate it. So Flash Medium can only be written in one direction, and you cannot do in-place writes. So for example, if we have operating system issuing writes to logical block addresses 0, 1, and 2, and if it tries to write the 0th page again, then you have to remap, most SSD vendors will remap the 0th write to the 3rd page and update the flash translation layer, and this is also known as address translation, and therefore helps to avoid the penalty of costly erase operations within these devices. And this is done through a policy called lock structuring. However, there is a downside of this, that you have to garbage collect free or invalid pages after a certain period of time, which adds to the overhead for writing to these devices. So with these properties in mind, I now move on to a background on OpenSSD hardware platform. So this hardware platform is being used worldwide at multiple research groups in USA and other places in the world, mainly from the perspective of developing new SSD designs, as well as teaching undergraduates how to program SSDs, as well as teach them how to do embedded systems programming. And this board comes with the Indilinx Barefoot ARM SSD controller, which is a commercial SSD controller, which was introduced in 2009 and is still being used in several mainstream SSDs today. So it is not a totally a wimpy controller. Secondly, it has 64 megabytes of DRAM, and you can configure up to 128 gigabytes of NAND flash on it. So this is the amount of RAM is quite low, up to about 2 bytes per 4 KB page, and therefore we had to, at several points of time in our prototyping experience, we had to limit the address space which we can address by reducing the amount of RAM which we are using. Secondly, this board comes with some reference FTL implementations which we thought to use, but they were poor in performance, and hence we had to spend some time optimizing them so as to bring to a level that we can prototype our new designs on that. Finally, this board provides SATA read interface and provides a UART port which can be connected to another machine, and this helps us to debug the firmware by spitting out print messages which can be read on another machine. So now I will move on to what a solid-state device looks like and how we change the interface for our previous projects. So a solid-state device mainly has read, write, and trim commands, and this helps it to emulate a disk-like interface, a permanent store for your data. In Flash TA, we proposed if you are using SSDs for the purpose of caching between DRAM and disk, why don't we have an interface which is purpose-built for the purpose of caching? And with caches, you have clean as well as dirty data. So we introduced new commands which can clearly distinguish between clean and dirty data and convey this information from the operating system to the device. Also, if the device internally evicts a block, then it returns an error on a read to that block, and the operating system can fetch that block from the underlying disk tier. So this is the not present read error. The motivation of designing SSE was to build a cache which is high performant as compared to using SSDs as a block cache, and also more reliable in terms of flash via route. Nameless Write, on the other hand, introduced new commands to build a cheap and fast SSD. The price difference is because of the reduced amount of memory which you need to configure in your device to store the mapping or the address translation mapping. To do this, Nameless Writes introduces new commands, especially the Nameless Write command, where the operating system tells the device what data has to be written, and the device picks up a location for that data and returns a physical address to the operating system. However, on a garbage collection or VLabeling process, when the device has to relocate the location of that block, it has to send a migration call back into the operating system asynchronously. So to summarize, there were several changes which we introduced to the normal SSD interface, and we introduced new forward commands from the operating system to the device, which required which changing the several operating system layers, and we also introduce return values, especially the not present read errors and physical addresses, which are not expected by the operating system today, but we introduce them. And we also introduce some new device responses, the migration callbacks, which are asynchronously sent back to the operating system. So with this background, I will now move on to the experiences over the course of prototyping. And I will talk about the challenges we faced during prototyping these two new SSD designs and interfaces, then the solutions which we proposed to address them, and the lessons we learned. So the journey of prototyping was not easy. And I will mainly describe the challenges related to introducing new forward commands and new device responses. I will not talk about the challenges we faced because of the low processing power and limited memory available on this board. Those are in the paper and can be referred. So the first assumption we made earlier when we built these systems in simulation was that the file system and the cache manager can directly interface with the device. So what we assumed that the new commands can simply be issued as a simple function call into the simulator. But in reality, that is not the case. There are several intermediate operating system layers, firmware layer, and hardware layer, which all have to be passed through when you're sending these commands to the device. So, and they provide a lot of friction when you're passing these new commands. So for example, if you consider the I/O scheduler, then if I have a write dirty and write clean command in the context of solid state cache, then I cannot merge those two commands because they have completely different consistency semantics. And if we merge them together, we are not getting the correct behavior. Also, we cannot reorder them. So we had to define new rules at the I/O scheduler level, which make sure that we disallow the merging and reordering of newer commands introduced in the block interface. Secondly, we had to introduce new command subtypes in different command carriers at the storage device driver levels so as to pass these commands all the way to the solid-state disk. This was not an easy task. Finally, within the hardware, the command types have to be masked so as to use or make use of the hardware command queues which accelerate the servicing of these commands. So the hardware command queues basically encode the logical block address and the number of sectors or the length of that command. What we did was we encoded the subtype within the length or the number of sectors because the hardware is something which we were not able to modify. So there were several lessons which we learned from this prototyping for the new commands or implementing new commands on this hardware board. The first lesson which we learned was, unlike simulation, when we try to prototype these new forward commands, we had to consider all layers of the operating system. In the case of the I/O scheduler, we had to consider how requests are merged or reordered. In the case of storage device drivers, which sit below the I/O scheduler, we had to consider adding new subtypes to the command carriers of these device drivers. The second lesson which we learned was, it's not just the endpoints of the system, the device and the file system. We also need to consider the hardware and the firmware and consider the complete SSD ecosystem when we are proposing new SSD designs as well as new interfaces. We need to encode the subtypes in the firmware so as to still make use of the hardware accelerators or the hardware command queues within these devices. Next, I will talk about the device responses from the device into the operating system. The assumption we made in the simulation process was that the device can directly send these reverse responses to the cache manager in the case of solid-state cache or the file system in the case of nameless write SSD. And we assumed that this is simply a function upcall. But in reality, that's not the case. In the case of solid-state cache, when we tried to pass the new array commands or the not present read errors, all these storage device drivers which sit below the I/O scheduler didn't allow these errors to propagate all the way up to the cache manager. What they did was they kept on retrying the command, which was errored, and eventually reset the ATA link between the device driver and the solid-state disk. And the device completely become unresponsive. Similarly, when we try to send the write responses to the operating system, what we found was, as part of the physical address, which can be encoded in the write response, but we had just 8 bits at our disposal for the write responses, and we were not able to encode the whole 64-bit physical address in those 8 bits. Similarly, migration callbacks, unlike network drivers, storage drivers are complex, and they cannot solicit interrupts in the same manner as, or unsolicited interrupts in the same manner as network drivers. So what we had to do was bypass the standard protocols and the standard way of interrupting, because those changes would be quite invasive. So the solutions which we proposed were, for the not present read errors, we overloaded the not present read errors on the data path from the device back to the operating system. What we did was, the device returns a magic pattern, and that pattern is when received by the cache manager, it identifies it as a block which has been evicted, and then tries back the underlying disk tier to read that block from the underlying disk tier. For the migration callbacks and the physical addresses, the problem was even more complex. What we did was, we split our flash translation layer design across the host operating system and the device. And now we pull the majority of the functionality into the kernel and implement majority of the FTL at the kernel level. Now, if we receive a forward command, it gets transformed by the kernel FTL into a raw flash command, which is a flash page read or write or block erase command. For the physical addresses or the migration callbacks, which are the new device responses, the kernel FTL is completely responsible to send them back to the file system. The device FTL doesn't care about them because the kernel FTL completely handles them. However, this split FTL design raises another complexity, which is related to the garbage collection, where if we have to garbage collect a block, we need to copy it back and forth from the host operating system into the device. So there were two major lessons which we learned over the course of implementing device responses over the hardware prototype. First, as is the case with forward commands, we should consider all operating system layers, especially the storage device drivers and the intermediate layers and the endpoints for the sake of implementing device responses. In the case of solid-state cache, we learned that handling of frequent benign errors was not possible at the traditionally implemented storage device drivers, which assume that errors are catastrophic and simply reset the ATA link. In the case of callbacks, we found that there are race conditions which we need to address so that the device and the file system do not deadlock into each other. Finally, we learned that simplicity and correctness are the two keys to success in implementing new device responses. Simplicity in the sense that when we were implementing the kernel FTL, that was far simpler for implementing new device responses, such as callbacks, because the block interface provides simpler interfaces than the device FTL. However, if we implement the kernel FTL, we ran into the problem of ensuring or enforcing correctness discipline for writing to a flash block to ensure that we do not overwrite a page within an erase block before erasing it. Now, I will talk about the evaluation of our prototypes. So the whole aim for prototyping was to validate our performance claims. We used 3 different systems for comparison. The first system uses Facebook Flash Cache Manager, which uses solid-state disk with the support for garbage collection. The second system uses solid-state cache design with the introduction of new commands to mark clean and dirty data, and it uses silent eviction, where the device can evict a block rather than copying it during the process of garbage collection. And finally, we evaluated the nameless write SSG interface for its performance and memory consumption. We used FileBench workload, which has different amounts of read, write, and async operations, and this helps us to exercise the different components in our system. So the first graph I show here is the SSE prototype performance. The y-axis shows the performance relative to no cache or disk-based execution. And what we found was, as we projected earlier, we were still able to get performance improvement over using SSDs as a block cache by introducing these new commands and making the device more intelligent about clean and dirty data during the garbage collection process. And the performance difference between the SSD as well as the SSE prototype reduces from the earlier projections of 168% to 52%, but that is primarily because of the fact that we are now using a faster PageMap FTL rather than using the most commonly available hybrid FTL. In case of read-intensive workloads, we found we didn't provide any performance improvement or performance degradation as we projected earlier in simulation. For async-intensive workloads, which are pretty common in mail server environments, we found that we can still provide 27% performance improvement because now we have one level of mapping which is stored completely within the device as we projected in simulation, which needs to be persisted. For the nameless write prototype performance, we measured the I/O operations per second for different kinds of workloads. And what we found was the big win from nameless write comes from the fact that we can substantially reduce the amount of device memory as compared to the faster performing page map FTL. In terms of performance, we found that we claimed that performance will be close to page map FTL. And in prototype, we found that that was the case, and we were almost close to page map FTL, except the optimization which we need to implement to improve the performance because of the fact that OpenSSD has larger pages, and we have to merge the writes which are going to the device at the operating system level. For sequential reads and random reads, we were still able to perform quite well or almost close to the PageMap FTL, and that was also the case with random read, where we were even better. So to conclude, I would like to reiterate that OpenSSD is a valuable tool for evaluating new SSD design. And we, over the course of prototyping, we faced several challenges, but we learned several lessons, which were some of them prototyping lessons, and most of them were research lessons, which can be applied to other SSD design. And recently, I have released the first high-performance open-source FTL, which can be used by other people to test and evaluate new SSD designs and interfaces. And I will be also showing the OpenSSD prototype at the poster session today. Thank you. Well, device responses here, the limitation was not related to DMA. We are still DMing read and write commands and the results from the device into the operating system. The problem was how the device sends them asynchronously in the form of new interrupts, and also in the case of the solid-state cache, how the device sends new error types back into the operating system because the storage-level device drivers are not able to handle new error types, and they simply assume that the errors are catastrophic and reset the outer link.
Other questions?